Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there and welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson. I'm joined as always by Kevin Zimmerman. We are about an hour and a half removed from the NBA draft lottery. Going to start with immediate reactions here, Kevin. I was really ready for this. I was really ready for chaos and just unpredictable things to happen and the Suns to not benefit from that. But with that being said, when I sat with this for a couple minutes and then went live on the radio and stumbled through the first things I said, this just still really sucks. It's really not great. It's a bummer because you can sit there and say, oh, yeah, they're going to be at four. Of course, they're going to be at five or six or seven or whatever. But the drop off from picking third or second or first, obviously, to sixth in this draft is seismic. It is humongous. And this is just a really tough blow for them, and it's a really tough blow for all the other teams that dropped three spots. There were four more teams, I think, that dropped three spots. Usually it's one team maybe dropped two spots, and that was it. No, a bunch of teams got leapfrogged. It was madness. It was really fun to watch. What was your instant reaction when everything went down?
I mean, we're jaded. We kind of live with and become numb to losing. So I think it's different for us than, like, just a fan. Like, I got texts from my friend Jeff. I talked to my wife, and both of them were just like, I don't understand how this could happen. This sucks. This isn't fair. I don't feel good about it. And it's like, I'm like, guys, it was a 26% chance. But you forget, like, you tell yourself all year watching this team, if you're a fan, that it's okay, well, it's not going well, but maybe this will lead to something good. And that was supposed to happen today, and it didn't happen. So here we are. It didn't lead to things that are great.
There was a 33% chance of the Suns dropping to six or seven, so this was a bad outcome. It was a unlikely outcome that they got at the end of the day when you're looking at the odds and everything. Just if you guys are catching up and have not seen the lottery standing somehow.
Yeah, the news.
We'll kind of break down how the entire broadcast went. What you're doing is you're staring at your screen in front of you, whether it's your phone, tablet, or whatever, looking at the odds orders, and you're looking up at the screen and seeing when something doesn't match. So when Miami goes, you're like, okay, Charlotte is next. So if we don't see Charlotte, that means that they've jumped, and you're just waiting for that moment when a team has jumped. Of course, the first team to do so was the Los Angeles Lakers, which just added an insurmountable amount of buzz all of a sudden to the event. The lottery is kind of boring and just weird. It's just a really weird event. But then once the Lakers happened, just the amount of, like, electricity, you could feel it, that it was coming from that room. I could feel it around me, and everyone was just ready to say, rigged, 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 it's all rigged. So the Lakers get jumped, and then the weirdest thing that I've ever seen in a lottery happen before, because I've never seen it happen before, the Wizards pop up when I believe it was Memphis was supposed to pop up, or New Orleans. It was one of them, and I was like, wait, does that mean both teams jumped? And then ESPN was actually kind of confused, because I believe Woj said that both teams had jumped, and then they just only showed Memphis on the screen. And then once I think Atlanta popped up or something, they actually put New Orleans on the screen. So New Orleans and Memphis both jump, and then it gets to the point at the sixth spot where Chicago is seven, and this is the point where you look and say, okay, if this isn't the Suns, that means they're in the top four, or this is the Suns. It was the Suns. They picked sixth, and then we go to commercial break with that top four of the Knicks, Lakers, Grizzlies, and Pelicans, and we're all looking around and saying, oh, here we go. Knicks 1, Lakers 2, or vice versa. This is so rigged. And then the NBA puts on the troll face and says, nah, it's New Orleans and Memphis 1 yeah. or 2. We're just messing with you guys. So New Orleans picks number 1. Memphis picks number 2. The Knicks 3, Lakers 4. Cavs are 5. And then the Suns are number 6. I think the immediate reaction that I had right away was, as soon as the Suns were where they were and we saw the top four teams that there were, I was like, okay, I mean, yes, picking six sucks, but the three teams I highlighted to watch for in terms of potential point guard movement and teams that could get Ja at number two and then look to move on from their point guard were New Orleans, Memphis, and L.A., and all three of them had a chance at it. And there's Memphis now at number two. They have Mike Conley, of course. New Orleans at number one could look at Zion Williamson and say, yeah, we'd rather actually just take the boost of number six than have Jrue Holiday kind of hover with them. Or what something that I wrote about as a possibility in there was New Orleans looking at something like the Clippers and saying, we're going to have this mix of young and old. The old is going to be led by Jrue Holiday. That's like their Danilo Gallinari type of player. And then the young, which of course Zion Williamson is much better than the likes of Landry Shamet and Shea Gilgeous-Alexander or whatever. But I think that was my immediate first reaction is, where do you think, I think New Orleans is, it's fascinating to look at how they break this down, because I haven't talked about Anthony Davis yet, but that's because Shams reported shortly after that this doesn't change anything. He still wants to be traded.
Yeah, let's just start at the top right there. I mean, it's, to me, it's kind of the status quo, honestly. Like, if Anthony Davis hasn't changed his mind, if this doesn't sway him, like, oh, this could be an actually interesting place to remain. You know, his agent is cool with Griff, I think, because obviously they worked together when Griff was at the Cavs. But, yeah, It's so confusing, because the one thing about the Pelicans is they were only really talking, it seemed, or listening to the Los Angeles Lakers. And now we don't even know who's leading the Lakers. It's like some Rambuses, Rob Pelinka, Jeannie Buss, and no real basketball operations person who might like be useful to decide, hey, this is the amount of basketball talent we're giving up for a really good player if we want to trade for Anthony Davis. That's a problem. So that's just a wild card there. And then, like I said, Anthony Davis's own feelings towards New Orleans is apparently unchanged and he wants out. So I guess after that point, you go to Jrue Holiday and you say, okay, if they want to move Anthony Davis and he wants to be moved, and by the way, I don't think they necessarily have to move him at the draft or even until the trade deadline, really. I mean, I just don't know. There's so many factors in this, and when you talk about the Suns and what they want to get in a guy like Jrue Holiday, which we've discussed before is pretty close to perfect as far as fit and age and all that stuff, it's what does he want to even do? Like, does he want to help rebuild? Because now he might have more incentive to be like, I'm going to stick with the Pelicans because I have Zion as a teammate even if Anthony Davis leaves. Who knows?
Memphis at two, obviously, it seemed like Mike Conley's days were numbered, even if they landed at 7 or 8 or wherever they were before this. I believe it was 8. So now you look at it and say, wow, Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr., wouldn't a great accent on top of that be one of these young players? And that's where the divide and where the Suns are at, picking at 6 as opposed to Memphis. Memphis can look at this as another young player to add to that equation, because I think maybe the wrinkle here that I haven't thought about yet until just this second is if they actually... Wait, what? What did I do?
Nothing. Don't worry about it.
You sure?
Haven't thought.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
I should have moved on. You're right. I just needed to know. It was a burning question that I needed to be answered right there. What if Memphis likes RJ Barrett more than Ja Morant and they want to keep Mike Conley? That's something we haven't even considered yet, and that's something that they could think. And going back again to the Clippers analogy, I think that is going to be, there's always trends that start up and teams are going to look at the Clippers and say, well, duh, we obviously want to be an 8 seed and kind of remain competitive while we're building all our youth. And the Memphis could look at that the same way with Conley, and then maybe they just so happen to like RJ Barrett more than Ja Morant, or they like Jarrett Culver more than those guys, or whatever it is, to go along with Jaren Jackson. But the most obvious thing is they take Ja Morant, they trade Mike Conley, and he becomes available to the Suns. Doesn't sound like, from what James Jones has said, that it's someone that they would be interested in. They did not acquire him at the trade deadline when it seemed like the opportunity to was there, from a league-wide perspective at least, to at least inquire about Mike Conley's services. And now the question becomes, where do the Suns fit into this with also the Lakers at 4, and if that makes Lonzo Ball available, or where Lonzo fits into this entire thing? Because I think the biggest impact of them moving to 4 is they can look at that as a bigger asset now. So they can look at Lonzo and say, oh no, he's not even in the deal anymore, and now they can trade Lonzo for six. So they drop two spots in the draft, essentially. They get rid of Lonzo, they bring in AD for four and all that stuff, and then they still get six to do whatever they want with. If they want to just get rid of Lonzo for that, that could be another option for them.
I'm going to just say, I think Conley seems like a long shot, too.
Yeah, it is.
Just to read a quote, James Jones was on Burns and Gambo in January, late January, before the trade deadline, and he basically said, for the most part, our team is all under 22, so if you try to add someone that's 33, 34 years old, it usually just doesn't work. That's too big of a gap. I don't really know what he's saying there, other than maybe it just doesn't match up with like personalities and a guy in that age range wanting to win. But Mike Conley's 31, so he's right on that border where it's like, I don't know if he was talking about Mike Conley, but that was a Mike Conley related question, basically, and he answered it that way. Other thing, dude would be a great mentor for Ja Morant for a year. So I don't even know if Memphis would even want to think about moving him immediately off
the
bat.
That's a good point, yeah.
So I'm almost not even thinking about Memphis right now. I think the Lakers, AD, Lonzo, lots of trade action in there is probably...
Well, the big... I'm motioning towards what I'm going to be talking about.
Oh, I thought you were raising your hand.
I'm doing an example for just you because this is a podcast in audio form and they can't see me. The big overarching thing over all of this is that it just got way more difficult to execute what they want to execute this offseason. Would have been a lot easier to just obviously get number one and get Zion, or get number two and get Ja, or even get number three and either
team
get,
likes Barrett, yeah.
Either get RJ Barrett or trade. But I don't think there's going to be a team at six saying, oh man, we love this. We love this DeAndre Hunter guy. We need to get our hands on him. There are going to be teams that love him, but don't get me wrong. But in terms of a guy that teams can just adore enough for them to get what they want, and it just gets so much more difficult now because the obvious move is to trade this pick. What I have done at least 15 different times since March is look at the points per game leaders of point guard and power forward and small forward, and just look at these names and be like, which of these guys are A, potentially available, B, fit what the Suns want, and C, it fit what the Suns want by being good enough.
Yeah.
Who meets that mix? And like the names that I come up with off the top of my head are Mike Conley, Drew Holiday. I don't think Lonzo's even in that conversation because he needs to show more. I don't even think he meets that qualification yet. I'm not saying I wouldn't trade him for six. I would absolutely get him for number six right now. Kyle Lowry is a name that comes to mind, but he's on an expiring contract, so does he really fit in? Goran Dragic, same thing. I don't think so. And at power forward, it's really scarce. There are not a lot of names there. Aaron Gordon is the only one that makes any sense to me, and I think he's a name that you look at, though, and say we're paying him $16, $18 million a year, and he doesn't even know what he is in the league yet still. He's still only 23, 24. It's obvious that he should be – we've talked about him countless episodes now. It's obvious that he should be some sort of Draymond Green type, but he's still trying to be Kevin Durant and trying to be an elite scoring four-man at his size who can handle and pull-up jumpers. Stop taking pull-up jumpers, Aaron Gordon. Just don't do that ever. It's like once he kind of learned how to shoot at U of A, he's like, ooh, this is fun.
And that was a big kind of.
It's a big kind of. So those are four or five names maybe, and it's like, can you even get those for number six? How does the trade work? How does the interest of all those teams work? Yeah, go ahead.
What if we just sit here, they draft some guy who's going to maybe make the rotation. What's the best outcome of this summer? Like, they sign Paul Millsap, paying him too much money because he's kind of old, and try to win. Like, that's kind of just the realistic, put on your thinking cap, try to predict realistic things, and the outcomes are not good again. And that's why we keep writing and mentioning in everything we write and everything we say, like, this is not an easy job for James Jones. It's not an easy job for Jeff Bauer. It's just, even a good GM, I don't know how to get out of this hole. And that's why you wrote, like, Zion was a cheat code. It's a way to get out of this and cheat your way out of it, basically. So we found out today that that's not going to happen.
It's not going to happen. So trading, okay. Drafting? Can you even get a guy here that's really going to help you that much? Who are we actually looking at?
Not,
I think there are names we're going to get into, and I think there's three guys in particular for me who I look at and say they fill a skill that the Suns need or fill a quote-unquote need for them, even if two of them are wings and obviously one of them is going to be a point guard. We're going to talk about Darius Garland. But speaking of Darius Garland, Sam Bassini came out with his new mock draft on The Athletic. He has them taking Darius Garland at number 6. He's an elite-level shooter as a guard with range out about 30 feet, putting pressure on the defense essentially as soon as he crosses half court. That sounds pretty good, Kevin. He's also terrific in ball screens, knowing exactly how to snake around defenders. That sounds really good, Kevin. We should probably draft this guy.
Yeah.
The critical swing skill for Garland long-term will be his ability to see the floor and make plays for others. Kevin, he's a point guard. Seems like a pretty critical swing skill to me for Darius Garland. I don't like picking 6, Kevin. This kind of sucks.
One thing, we hardly saw him play this year. And if you just want to look at Devin Booker, I know Devin Booker's like a very unique example and he got really good and we didn't see that coming. But there's at least, like, not saying Darius Garland's going to be a great player and superstar and all whatever Devin Booker's becoming, but there's a chance that we just didn't see him develop that enough, because I think some high school guys are just, they're in that zone, right, where they just are so good at scoring, you don't have to pass. He played 5 games, and he was shooting, let's look, he was shooting 54%, 48% from 3, and taking nearly 5 a game. He's like so good, I don't know if it was just that's how he plays, and until he hits a spot where people are just game planning for him or able to stop him, he's not going to think about passing. So that's my only terrible argument about that I guess we just have to see about. But yeah, it's not good. It's Givony had the Suns taking Culver at 6. We saw his limitations, I think, in that national championship game, which is only one game, but I'm not sold on his shot, which is a real concern. He's not a super athlete, I don't think.
No, he's not. I mean, the whole thing kind of goes back to what Suns fans have been doing lately, which is just wallowing in their misery. And it's fair to a certain point. We asked for questions, and Ryan Powell tweeted us and said, since this rebuild is a failure and the Suns are going to win 23 games next year, should we just trade Booker and Ayton for Infinity Stones and disintegrate ourselves? That is some Marvel inside jokes there. If you have not seen the Avengers movies, you are lost in the sauce, as they say. So do we want to dive into these guys now? I was just kind of bringing up Garland because the mock draft was in front of me, and it was just an overarching point of you have to draft a point guard at 6 who doesn't know how to be a point guard. That's his biggest weakness, is that he doesn't know how to be a point guard.
Right.
Like, I've been saying it for months. This draft sucks, and that was the biggest drop-off for me after 4, is that you're just in this part where it's like, DeAndre Hunter, what does he even do on offense? Can Jared Culver handle like being a first or second or even third option?
So I think the biggest thing that we're getting at here is I think there are guys who can be good players, maybe even starters, but it's not going to happen soon. And you've signed people to be in front of whoever these people are. Like, if Darius Garland's your starting point guard, you didn't do your job, James Jones. You didn't sign a veteran to at least ease him into things more. And I'm just of the belief that you got to ease guys into certain situations. Like DeAndre Ayton, I think, is a perfect example where he's starting, but they eased him in. I mean, Culver would be playing behind a bunch of guys. Even if they traded 2 of their wings, he's still behind Mikal. He's still behind, if they re-signed Kelly and traded Josh Jackson and TJ Warren, like we all keep talking about, he's still the third wing option. So none of these things are just real needle movers, I don't think. And you just got to accept that and then look at really long-term projections and not know whether the Suns have the infrastructure to deal with that and develop players, which is another issue.
Yeah, the whole developing players thing is where I worry.
You mentioned you had 3 names that you would be interested in. Shoot, go for it.
We talked about all 3 of them kind of already. With Jared Culver, I think it's obvious that you're looking at this team and what Josh Jackson hasn't developed into and what TJ Warren is as an offensive player, and what you project Culver to hopefully develop into is a secondary ball handler. not really a primary option offensively, but someone who can make all the reads as the second guy, make all the passes. He sees the floor really well. My favorite thing about him by far is just the bulk of him and how he uses it around the rim. He's like, there's just theories as to how tall he is because he's grown and we just do get his measurements there, but he looks like he's 6'6", 6'7", 6'8", somewhere in that range, and he's got some bulk on him that he uses really well around the rim. It's just a complete variation of finishes, but when you watch him lay the ball in, it's a guy that understands where defenders are at and how he has to position the ball around them, and he shows good touch in those situations, which is a really big thing for him becoming a scorer. He's going to have to tighten up the handle. I think his passing is maybe one of the most underrated skills in this draft. I think it's really good. You said you don't believe in the shot. I don't think anyone can after it really improved and then all of a sudden just dipped off dramatically in the last 2.5 months of the season. But the questions with him are, can he defend his positions, which is going to be the 2, the 3, maybe even the 4 some nights. It really depends on where you play him. And then are you actually going to get that development that is going to be required from him at his age? Because if he is Evan Turner all of a sudden and he doesn't really develop that much, that's a big problem. That's a huge problem because Evan Turner's not that good. And you don't really need that skill set if it's that in terms of talent. But looking at Culver, I think he is the most obvious guy for them to take. I don't even think it's Darius Garland, and that's not just because I have Culver higher than Garland. I just think Culver fits in with what they need, which is good players, and that was the pitch I made on my draft board beforehand, is that I'm pretty sure Jarrett Culver is good. Most outcomes for him, he is going to be a fine NBA player. There's just a lack of star upside there, and I'm fine with just getting that guy at 6 in this crappy draft that sucks.
In any draft, if you got an Evan Turner 6, that's a lot different than Evan Turner 2 in his
draft.
That's
a really good point.
So
yeah.
I think that's a good comp and expectation, at least for the type of player you're thinking about. Who else?
DeAndre Hunter's more obvious just because this team needs good defensive players, and I have no doubt in my mind that he's going to be at least a good NBA defender, potentially even great, but I really hope he's not David Nwaba, but 6'9". Like, David Nwaba is a really good defensive player, but he's David Nwaba, and shouts to the guy. And there's people that are going to clamor for guys like him. And I think Cole Zwicker has always had an obsession with Caruso, the Lakers guard. And that's because he really knows how to defend. He's a really smart player. But at a certain point, there are just limitations and what you can do in other spots, especially offensively. And with Hunter, he's just going to have to be a good shooter. The good news is that his numbers jumped this year, and he showed an ability to shoot. Where the worry is, and some of the downplay and why I think he's going to fall to 6, is I thought he was kind of coming into his own as a ball handler and a scorer, and then the NCAA tournament kind of shook us out of that. Sure, he had a great last 10-15 minutes of the game or whatever and hit some shots, but that's certainly potential at this point, is him developing as a scorer. But if he can defend and hit threes, I know it's a traditional 3-and-D guy, but all of a sudden you have Bridges, Oubre, and Hunter. Hunter's more taking the 3-4 types. Bridges and Oubre are the quicker guys on the guards. That's really three guys. You can just throw those three guys out there with Booker long-term and just wreak havoc. Ayton as well, same thing. That's where I look at Hunter and say more specifically towards guarding bigger forwards.
Yeah.
That's not a guy the Suns have, but that's how niche this is. It's like they don't have guys who can guard bigger forwards. I mean, that's kind of how we have to go with this spot. Third guy's Darius Garland. He plays point guard, and they don't have a point guard. You need point guards to win in the NBA, and they still don't have one yet. I recommend getting one.
I made a joke about Googling Sekou Doumbouya. Are we going to have to watch his video, or are we just going to refer to him as the guy that we have to Google and Google him if you want to find out about him? Maybe the Suns will take him and like hope that he just has the most star power. I don't know.
For those curious, I do not watch high school. I just don't do it. Can't do it. Can't do AAU. I refuse. No, thank you. I'm going to have to break that rule for Darius Garland because he played 5 games at Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have to go find his high school tape and see what it's all about, because I'm not going to rely on a 5-game sample size. Now I have to rely on a sample size that includes high school tape. Isn't that exciting? But Garland, by now you kind of know what he is. We just read off his seniors report. It's kind of the Dame Lillard mold. That's what Mike Schmitz compared him to, and it's a similar thing. I think these are guys you can get excited about.
Yeah.
I don't think there's anything to be really down about. It's just that we spend this whole week, and I say this whole week, but this whole process looking at what if the Suns get Zion, what if the Suns get Ja, and yes, those odds were only at 27% that they were going to get a top 2 pick. They were also only at 33% that they were going to land at 6 or 7, and that's the outcome we just got. So that's just it sucks. That's what I kept saying on our radio show earlier. It just sucks.
Honestly, this is like the weird territory where I'm personally thinking about skipping over guys like maybe not Culver, but like Jackson Hayes. Like, that's obviously nah. Coby White, I don't know what his ceiling is. It doesn't seem very high. And you either go like super specific role player like Brandon Clark from Gonzaga, who's like a 6'7" wiry, pretty much a center, or Bol Bol, and you hope that Bol Bol can like somehow play power forward next to DeAndre Ayton, but vice versa. That's where I'm at, where it's like he might have a lot more upside, yeah. And I might just pick one of those guys for two very different reasons, but if you think you can fit them in and they're going to be really good long-term NBA players, you just do it there and hope you're right.
There's going to be a lot of Brandon Clark noise from a certain contingent of Suns Twitter.
So, yes.
and just Twitter overall, I think there's going to be a lot of noise. Just take the guy who can give you 14 to 18 good minutes right away.
Honestly, is he better than DeAndre Hunter if he can shoot, which is a huge...
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So...
I just don't know if he can shoot.
Yeah.
I don't know. I see videos of, and again, I 100% respect the work of and opinions of all the people who think Brandon Clark is the second or the third or the fourth best prospect in this draft. And there are a lot of people who think that. But if we're taking numbers on his mid-range and just saying like, oh, this is going to translate to three because guys always translate to three, that's just a crapshoot. We just don't know if he's going to translate to three, and his mid-range jumper means absolutely nothing to him playing a four. And you can say, well, if you play a five with it, and now you're already qualifying your five to do certain things. He's a five until he learns how to shoot. You are what you defend. No, you're not what you defend, because Ben Simmons ain't a point guard, and he's guarding point guards. Ben Simmons ain't a four, and he's guarding. You know what I mean? It's not what you are defend. That thing sucks. I hate that thing.
You don't like that thing?
I hate it. It sucks. Mikal Bridges is a point guard because he's guarding Russell Westbrook.
I think it's a fluid thing.
It is fluid. It's very fluid. And yes, Brandon Clark can work in the four in certain situations.
Your limitations matter more than what you're good at, I guess is what I'm saying.
I'm saying from the jump, you have to evaluate him as an energy five who can't shoot right now. He's an explosive shot blocker, a terrific finisher around the rim. And like I said, I think he's the one guy you can look in this draft outside of Zion and say, he's going to be good for you right now. They think he's, whether he's a ninth man or a fourth man, I don't know where it is on your pecking order, but he can be good in the NBA. I have a really good feeling about it.
Anything else? We can go deeper on these guys later.
We're going to have to. We don't have a choice, Kevin. That's what's going to happen. This is where we find ourselves.
Oh, man. You're usually a huge, like, I'm going to watch the first 30 prospects guy. You don't seem excited about this, but, you know, you're going to get excited, I think.
I tried to get it out of me when it was, like, six games of the year, and I wrote that column that was like, I hate this. We have to watch the draft again, and especially this draft. This draft sucks, and tried to get it out of my system, but it's reeling back up. I think the one thing to watch with this draft specifically is going to be, it appears right now, the consensus top three is RJ, Morant, and Zion. So that leaves a lot of open room at four and five for guys to kind of shuffle in there and move up boards. Like, is Cam Reddish going to be the guy that separates himself in the workouts? I think he's going to be a top five pick just because of what he's going to show in that type of setting. But I think Phoenix at six is going to have to look at that unknown of who's at four and who's at five and kind of say, who were the guys that we like in this entire mix of six to seven players we like? Like, if their only guy they really like is Darius Garland, he goes four or five.
Do you trade up?
Do you trade up, or do you trade down now? Do you trade the pick when you weren't even thinking about trading the pick before? The good news is that if that is the three and it goes that way, Lakers at four have Lonzo. I don't know if that means anything. But they are getting mocked. Darius Garland's getting mocked there, from what I saw. I think
mocked there. Ha, ha, ha.
Talking to you, Magic Johnson. Yeah. Loyal listener, Magic Johnson. Cleveland at five has Colin Sexton, but we've also heard noise that, like, if they got a point guard they like, that they would move him. That was Ja Morant, though, so we don't know if Darius Garland is that guy. But there's an extreme amount of variance to who could be like. It would not surprise me if we got to... if we got to the draft and Nasir Little was a consensus, like, he's going to go four or five. Bull Bull, like Kevin Porter Jr., like that.
Yeah.
Jaunte Porter after three torn ACLs or whatever many he's had.
I'm not buying that one.
No, you're not buying that one. But there's just like how the lottery was unpredictable, I think that entire space is going to be unpredictable, and it's either going to hurt or help the Suns right now. I think that's going to be the biggest storyline for them 6 weeks out. DeAndre Hunter, by the way, dropped out of the NBA Combine. Kind of a weird move because guys in like the 20s and the 15s will drop out. Chandler Hutchison dropped out a while ago, and it was like known for 6 weeks that the worst kept secret in the world was that the Bulls were going to draft him, and they were the team that promised him. There were a couple guys, Rui Hachimura dropped out, and he's a guy that could have a promise in the teens or whatever, and Killian Tilly out of Gonzaga, same dude. But Hunter is a guy who's supposed to go in the top 7 or 8, so it appears he's going to really rely on the individual workouts, and that's just an interesting move and an assertion by his camp that they like where he's slotted right now. They don't see any value in him going to the combine.
Full disclosure, I didn't realize that apparently the Hawks have the Dallas pick. So if I'm looking at the right lottery, the Hawks have 8 and 10.
They sure do.
So, I mean, there's an easy trade down scenario for you.
Protect Kevin Herter at all costs.
Yeah. This is so it'll be an interesting little month here, month plus.
Jeez. It'll be interesting to see what the Suns say. I don't think it will be, actually, but because they're not going to be like, yeah, this sucks.
They can't do that.
They can't do that, but what they can do is introduce Monty Williams as their head coach, and with the Sixers eliminated, we're surely looking at next week as a possibility for that, so we'll be back with our thoughts on that, and then, of course, leading up to the draft for the next month or so, we'll lead into it. What are we pointing at, Kevin Zimmerman?
Do we cover all the questions?
Oh, the questions. We asked for questions. I mean, someone asked who the Daniel Jones of this draft is. Great joke, Vincent. I appreciate it.
Sekou Dembélé.
Yeah. I think I just kind of answered. Like, it might be Bull Bull. Bull Bull's the guy who the Cleveland Cavaliers just take at 5, whatever.
And just like, I don't like anything here. I'm taking Daniel Jones.
He's basically asking who, like, the Thon Maker, Georgios Papagiannis is of this draft. And that's usually in, like, the 10 to 12 range. But in this, I think it's just the West at, like, 4 or 5. Do you see any other questions that you really wanted to hit on? I think we hit on most of what...
That's true.
Alex, I mean, Jeffrey asked why God. And, like, dude, I'm not the guy to talk to, but I appreciate the question, Jeffrey.
He's a religious studies major. He should know the answer.
Did you really look at his bio and it says...
Professor now, basically. Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks,
Alex Viro, sorry, butchering your name. Should the Suns look to trade with Memphis center around the 6th pick for Mike Conley? We kind of went over this, but... yeah, that's... I think, and to go with that, what could the Suns reasonably get with that pick as far as trades... from Madel Gruel X. To couple those two together, I think we answered it a bit, but this is not looking good for trading up.
Well, Conley's interesting because his salary is so big. It's 32, so you're only halfway there with Tyler Johnson's deal. So you got to throw in TJ Warren, too. And it's like, well, do you even want to throw TJ Warren into this? Does Memphis even want TJ Warren in this scenario?
Yeah.
And then it's like, do they want Josh Jackson to the Suns? They have to find salary somewhere else, so maybe that's where a 13 comes in, perhaps. But Conley, I think, just really makes a ton of sense. It's only for 2 years, so there's not a huge commitment to him and in the same way coming back, whereas you get him for 2 years for sure. I think he showed that when he was healthy, which is the thing we're going to keep talking about with him, is when he was healthy, he's still a top 10, 12 point guard in this league, and that's what this team needs. They need a solid, proven piece at point guard and the same at power forward, and then they'll be ready to start making the jump here eventually. And Conley would be half the mission complete, and that's why I would do this on top of all the reasons we talked about number 6. I mean, would you trade 6 for Conley right now, assuming it is TJ Warren and... Tyler Johnson, because we can't just say like 13 comes
yeah,
solves everything.
That's actually a reasonable thing. If we overlook what I kind of crapped on it earlier in the podcast, so I guess that's good I brought this up. But yeah, that's like a, hey, you're not value-wise, I don't know if you're getting enough, but if you're trying to get more of a balanced roster, that would certainly help. And I just shrugged.
Would you trade number 6 for Lonzo Ball?
Yeah.
Me too.
Straight up.
It was a lot bolder when I would say I would trade pretty number 2 up for Lonzo Ball than trading 6. 6 is kind of easy. It's an easy call.
Yeah. Surefire NBA player with two positions they can play, yeah.
Do we have to go a tier down now and start considering, like, the Dennis Schroeders of the world for number six now? Just because the value is that much lower? Like, we should probably dive down a bit deeper and see what else is out there, because we're looking at a certain caliber of player because we were looking at number two, number three, number four, and now it's number six all of a sudden. Yikes. Yakers. Yeah. Not great. Any other questions that we had there?
I think we're good. Just wanted to make sure we covered all of them.
Yeah. Shout out to you guys who sent in your questions.
Short notice.
Means a lot. Out of nowhere. Especially in your fragile states, as we are too, to come in and provide more hashtag content.
Hopefully by this point where we answered them, you're not just sitting in your tub crying or whatever. Yeah. Sad Suns fans do.
Okay. I think we're going to end it there. Thanks for listening, everyone. Leave the reviews if you want. Remember, be honest on those reviews. I do not want you lying to me. If you think we're worth 3 stars, give me my 3 stars. If you think I'm 5, I'm 5. I'm the podcast now. If you think we're 5, give us 5. And you know what? If you think we're 1, we can take that hit. We're okay with that. Just don't do it for comedic sake, because it's actually kind of important. I could see someone like being that and be like, haha, remember when you said you would take a 1-star review? Here it is, idiot. And now it's like, oh man, our rating went down, and that means less people can find the podcast and stuff. It is actually kind of important that you leave a review, but I just kind of feel weird being like, please leave 5 stars, when the entire purpose of this is to actually rate it. So just rate it honestly. All we want is honesty on the Empire of the Suns podcast. Subscribe, follow us on Twitter, all that good stuff, at Empire of the Suns. Kevin is at K Zimmerman AZ. I'm at Kellen Olson. Hopefully I pop up, or else you don't know how to spell my name probably and you'll never find me. That's fine. I can afford the lost follower or two. We'll see you next time. Bye.